It's 9 a.m. and you're listening to 88.5 WHPK-FM Chicago, the pride of the South Side. Sports Talk Chicago is now on the air. Welcome in. My name's John Zaglul, and I'll be with you for the next hour. We have so much to get to in this hour-long time span, including some breaking news. Fred Hoiberg, the former now Bulls coach, has been fired by the Chicago Bulls. This just happened 3 minutes ago as we came on the air. This is a bombshell. We're going to talk about that, talk about yesterday's Bears game, what it means for them, plus MLB non-tender news. All of that coming up, a big show, lots of breaking news that we're going to get to going on during this hour. Before we get started, let's take care of some housekeeping. You're listening to 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. Now, you can reach out to me personally on Twitter at John Z Sports, Instagram at John Zags, and Facebook at John Zaglul. You can also watch the Facebook live broadcast of this show. See what's going on up here in the booth at WHPK. All music that you hear on today's program is produced and performed by TMMRW, and he's on all music platforms, including Spotify and iTunes. So if you like what you've heard, make sure to check him out later on. Now, if you want to contribute to today's conversation, and by my goodness, there are going to be many of those as we talk about what's been going on here in Chicago sports, give me a call at 773-702-8424, 773-702-8424, or feel free to shoot me a DM on Twitter or shoot me a DM on Facebook. I'm all open to answering your questions and your queries as we go through today's show. But as I mentioned, breaking news, we'll get to the Bears in a minute. Breaking news, Fred Hoiberg of the Chicago Bulls, the head coach, has now been fired. This just got broken literally a few minutes ago, right before we got on the air, by Shams Charania of Watch Stadium and The Athletic. He has been fired. He has a 5-19 record this season and finishes his tenure at 115-155 with one postseason appearance that finished with a first-round exit. And it's funny because I was going to talk about the Bulls regardless today, so it's ironic that all of a sudden, as we come on the air, Fred Hoiberg's been fired. The Bulls are 5-19. So why has he been fired? Let's look back at what Fred Hoiberg has done in his tenure with the Bulls and what has led up to him getting fired, which, again, a bombshell report coming out this morning. Here's my thing with Fred Hoiberg, and I've mentioned this before, you know, on my podcast, on my website, you know, long before anything on this show specifically. In my eyes, my problem with Fred Hoiberg is the fact that he is not a leader. Fred Hoiberg is not a leader in the NBA. He's a great college coach, don't get me wrong. His offensive style, his defensive style, you know, the way he's able to lead on players, that's great from a college perspective. But as we've seen time and time again, especially with Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, back during early in his tenure, Fred Hoiberg cannot lead a superstar in the NBA. And that's been proven. Jimmy Butler had no respect for him, and he ended up leaving. Derrick Rose the same, and even though Rose was already past the pinnacle of his career, he was still a decent player here in Chicago after his injuries, and he didn't appreciate what Fred Hoiberg had to say. Nor did Jimmy Butler. I equate Hoiberg to a good coach in regards to guys who are just happy to be in the NBA. Case in point, the Chicago Bulls. Come on, you're using guys like Antonio Blakeney, Ryan Arcidiacono, I mean, even Zach LaVine until this year specifically, are all guys who are just so grateful and so happy to be on an NBA team. And when you're so grateful and so happy to make it to the pros, you'll do whatever is told of you. In that case, that's what Fred Hoiberg does. Hoiberg's a great coach for guys who are so grateful and so happy to be in the NBA, and that's it. He cannot coach a superstar. Heck, he can't even coach a well-seasoned veteran. That's not his style of coaching. And when the Bulls first hired him and fired Tom Thibodeau, that itself was a head-scratching decision. And I understand that Thibodeau was under fire because he, quote-unquote, overworked his players and couldn't lead the Bulls deep into the playoffs, but I'll tell you what, he's a 10 times better coach than Fred Hoiberg ever will be. Whether it be at the college or NBA level for Hoiberg, just to make things even, doesn't make a difference. Thibodeau is a 10 times better coach than Fred Hoiberg. The Bulls brought in Hoiberg because he knows John Paxson very well. And although in his first 2 years he broke even and kind of posted very similar numbers to Vinny Del Negro when he was the coach of the Bulls back in the late 2000s and early 2010s, in the end, Hoiberg couldn't get it done. Granted, he didn't have a team these past two seasons, but right now the Bulls have an exciting young core, and that should not be mistaken. Lauri Markkanen just returned. Wendell Carter Jr. has picked it up. We talked with Casey Johnson a couple of weeks ago on this show specifically, and he told us to watch out for Wendell Carter Jr. And since he said that, Carter has 12.7 boards averaging on the season. And those averages have significantly gone up because 4 weeks ago when we talked about Carter, I was worried. He was only averaging 8-4. Now he's up to 12-7. So the Bulls have this exciting young core of players, which is without a doubt. How is Fred Hoiberg capable of leading them? He hasn't proven anything in regards to his leadership abilities. The team is 5-19 this year. I know they're trying to get more draft picks and, you know, help themselves out in the future. But I mean, come on, 5-19? You're not the Cleveland Cavaliers. You have multiple young pieces in which you can build your team around. Markkanen is just coming back. Carter has been doing decently. Chris Dunn is on his way back. Bobby Portis coming back soon. There have been lots of injuries, but when healthy, this team is very capable of competing. Maybe not winning that much, but competing for sure. And Zach LaVine, who we failed to even mention, this year Zach LaVine's averaging over 25 points per game. And nobody seems to care because the Bulls are just so mediocre, but LaVine's having an all-star type season in the East, and actually, I wouldn't be surprised if he was named an all-star. You've got a bunch of decent players on this team, players that are capable of not going 5-19, but, you know, maybe 10, or, you know, getting 10-11 wins instead at this point, instead of going 5-19. And once everybody returns healthy, this is a Bulls team that could actually, believe it or not, break even if they really wanted to the rest of the way, based on the players and the talent that they have. And instead, Fred Hoiberg has not let them do that. A 5-19 record, a 115-155 record over 4 years? Yeah, it's not a surprise that he got fired. I'm not surprised at all. I've been calling for this for a number of years. After his first Bulls season, he went 41-41, and the Bulls failed to make the playoffs that year. And right away, I said he should be fired. Because that team, in regards to Rose and Butler, that era of Bulls basketball was not over yet. They had chances to do better than 41-41 and make the playoffs, and they didn't. And that was Hoiberg's first year at the helm. And year two, they obviously did, and then blew their 2-0 lead against the Celtics in the playoffs and lost subsequently 4-2. And then last year, of course, a train wreck, and this year even worse, 5-19. So this isn't surprising. So I hope you realize that this should not be something that is, you know, extremely crazy or something like that, because eventually you have to see something like this coming. When you lead your team to a 5-19 record, when you have young core players that you can build your team around and you're not doing it, there's a reason for you to be let go. And just 4 minutes into today's show's broadcast, Fred Hoiberg has been fired. And this story is so fresh, there has not been a replacement named. I mean, this is all just being broken on the spot at the moment. New piece of news coming in now. Here we go about the coaching responsibilities. Associate head coach Jim Boylan will take over as the permanent head coach of the Bulls to replace Fred Hoiberg. No interim title, league sources tell ESPN and Adrian Wojnarowski. Jim Boylan is now the head coach, and he's not an interim coach. Jim Boylan is the head coach now of the Chicago Bulls. He was a former assistant to Greg Popovich. So, wow, now that part is surprising. You'd think maybe Boylan, he's been with the Bulls for a couple of seasons now. Maybe he'd just be the interim head coach and they'd look for a replacement in the offseason. But that's not the case. At this time, Jim Boylan is now officially the Chicago Bulls head coach. And Fred Hoiberg, as we came on the show talking about to begin, is now no longer the head coach of the Bulls. He has been fired. And that is a crazy way to start this morning's show. The National Foundation for Infectious Diseases reminds you that vaccinations are not just for kids. More U.S. adults die of vaccine-preventable diseases than from breast cancer, AIDS, or traffic accidents. Talk with your doctor and visit www.adultvaccination.org. If you're just joining us, again, big news. The Chicago Bulls have fired head coach Fred Hoiberg today, happening just under 10 minutes ago as we came on the air this morning. This is some big news. So if you have some thoughts on this, please give me a call. We'll put you on the air, 773-702-8424. Again, that's 773-702-8424. Unbelievable to see that Hoiberg got fired as we broke the news today. We'll get back to Hoiberg later. I've given you a bit of a synopsis of what's going on. And remember now, Jim Boylan is now the permanent new head coach of the Chicago Bulls. But I want to go back to yesterday's Bears game. A thrilling one, that is. One in which the Bears, though, ended up losing in overtime against the Giants, 30-27. Now, I want to focus in on two things, and they're both involving Chase Daniel. Because, first of all, you could say what you want. Yesterday's game was something that no one wants to remember. Daniel did not have a good game. Two interceptions, four fumbles in regards to, you know, not even being able to corral the ball after the snap. Luckily, none of those fumbles were recovered by the Giants, but nevertheless, those are four fumbles. That is unacceptable. Four fumbles and two interceptions as a quarterback is unacceptable in an NFL football game. And it's a shame because just a week ago, we were praising Chase Daniel. He had an amazing game and stepping up against the Lions and leading the Bears to victory on Thanksgiving Day. But yesterday, it was completely the opposite. Two interceptions, four fumbles. You can't do that. You're not going to win a football game when you do that. Now, here are the good parts of Daniel's performance, though. In crunch time, when it mattered, he rallied his troops to almost completing an unbelievable comeback. I mean, the Bears were down by 10 points with less than 2 minutes to go. They kick a field goal, which is fine. They recover an onside kick, then score a touchdown as time expires in regulation to force overtime. That is unprecedented. I was watching the game yesterday, and as I saw them continue to mount this comeback, I kept doubting them. I kept saying, there's no way they're going to pull this off. And as time expired, out of all people, Tariq Cohen threw a touchdown. The Bears had trickery on that play, multiple laterals, and ended up being Tariq Cohen throwing a touchdown to Anthony Miller to force overtime. So I'll give Daniel that. He led his team to 10 points in less than 2 minutes and kept his team in the game when it really mattered. Now, the one thing is, though, and this is the real philosophical question, should the game have even been that close in the first place? No. The Bears should have beaten the Giants easily yesterday It should not have come down to the final seconds of the fourth quarter. It shouldn't have went to overtime. That was supposed to be a double-digit win for the Bears. Even with Chase Daniel, based on how he performed the week before at least. And what makes it even more ironic is that Jordan Howard had a great game. He broke out of his shell. Tariq Cohen, another great game. The running game was there. You know, the receiving game was there. But Daniel and his two picks, one for a touchdown. Daniel and his four fumbles, none of which were recovered, but all resulted in huge losses of yards. That all contributed to the Bears' loss yesterday, and in a big way. In a bigger way than you'd think. Jordan Howard, going back to him though, 78 rushing yards, 4.8 yards per carry. I'll tell you what, I'm so happy to see Howard finally break out of his shell. I mean, all year, and of course, you know, he hasn't been utilized correctly, which we've talked about before, because of the fact that he's not a good pass-catching running back, he's not getting the opportunities that he once was. But yesterday, I think, in my opinion, he made the most out of every opportunity he got. 4.8 yards per carry, that's superstar-level stuff. That's the Jordan Howard that I know. That's the Jordan Howard that I love to watch. And he did it yesterday. That's something that the Bears need every game for the rest of the season. And I know I'm issuing this challenge in vain. I know it's a very hard challenge to continue to maintain, but I'll tell you what, if the Bears can get 4.5 yards per carry from Jordan Howard for the rest of the season, that is going to be a huge boost for them come down the stretch and come playoff time. I was talking with someone the other day about the Bears, just as a franchise. They've never been known to have a great quarterback. But you know what they've always been known for? Their great defense and their rushing game. I mean, think about the Bears even when they made the Super Bowl in 06. Thomas Jones, Cedric Benson. Benson, not a great running back, but a good third down back that year. And Thomas Jones had the bulk of the carries. 85, when the Bears made the Super Bowl, Walter Payton, arguably the greatest running back in NFL history. The Bears have always had a running game. And this year, in a year in which the defense has been unbelievable, the running game hasn't really been there. So it's nice to see Howard pick it up. It's nice to see Cohen continue with his success, because that's something that the Bears need. That's a franchise component. That's not just a 2018 component. That's a franchise component, and the Bears need that in order to win more games down the stretch. Speaking of Tariq Cohen, I'll tell you what, even in a loss, he is the MVP of yesterday's game, without a doubt. Cohen rushed for 30 yards, had 156 receiving yards, paced all receivers in that game, including Odell Beckham Jr. Tariq Cohen had a better game than one of the best wide receivers in the game of football today. He also had the passing touchdown. Imagine how much pressure that is. Tariq Cohen, a running back, throwing the game-tying touchdown as time expires in the fourth quarter. It wasn't Chase Daniel. Daniel had no pressure on him at that point. Daniel did a good job of leading them downfield, but in that specific play, in that moment, Tariq Cohen, with a glove on his hand, had to throw a touchdown pass through the defense to Anthony Miller to tie the game up. Imagine how much pressure is on Cohen. Imagine how much is riding on that specific play. And Cohen came through. And I'll tell you what, after yesterday's performance, after what I watched from Cohen, from rushing, from receiving, from, heck, passing, I'll tell you what, Tariq Cohen now is a top 10 running back in the NFL. And I said it, and I'm proud to say it. What has he done that's awful? The guy is one of the best pass-catching backs in the NFL. Sure, his running needs a bit more work, but I'll take 600 rushing yards and 800 receiving yards for the entire season from Tariq Cohen, because that's what he's going to get if he stays on pace for what he's doing. In my opinion, with those numbers, with what he did yesterday, he cemented himself as a top 10 running back in the NFL. not closer up the ladder, but I'd say 8, 9, or 10, you could definitely pencil in Tariq Cohen now after yesterday's performance. Because I'm impressed. I am sold. That display was unbelievable. It's something that I'll remember for a while from Tariq Cohen. Now, defensively, for the Bears, certain guys also did pretty well. Khalil Mack, 4 tackles, 1 sack. Hakeem Hicks, 6 tackles, 1 sack, and a rushing touchdown on offense. Kind of reminded me of William the Refrigerator Perry. Very similar, actually. And then Roquan Smith, another 7 tackles. And Danny Trevathan, by the way, led everyone with 8 tackles. A lot of guys did well on defense. Here's the one problem, though. Something that I alluded to last week, and I was worried about from last week. The Bears couldn't contain Saquon Barkley. They had trouble. Barkley, 125 rushing yards, averaged over 5 yards a carry. And I said last week that if the Bears want to win this game against the Giants, they have to find a way to contain Barkley. Eli had a horrible game. I wasn't worried about Eli from the get-go. But I was worried about Saquon, and he did great. And yesterday, too, I think he proved to not just me, but he proved to most of the country, considering that this game was on 46% of Fox TV households, he proved to most of the country that he is for real. And it's a shame for Barkley himself, too, because he's on a bad team. Everyone wants the Giants to draft a quarterback, or wanted them to, and they drafted Barkley instead. But don't forget that Barkley is already going to get 1,000 rushing yards this year. He's averaging nearly 5 yards a carry on the season, and he catches the football. Saquon Barkley is going to be one of the best running backs in the NFL, and may already be, depending on who you ask. Such an explosive player. I mean, he's the reason, in my eyes, why the Giants even have 4 wins. It has nothing to do with Eli. Eli's career is over. You know, maybe you could attribute some to Odell Beckham, but Odell's stats rely on Eli. Odell's a wide receiver. Barkley makes things happen when there's nothing there. Finding holes in the line, you know, catching passes from Manning near the line of scrimmage and gaining 10 yards out of it instead of 2. That's Saquon Barkley. And he proved to me, and as I mentioned, all of America yesterday, that he's no bust, he's for real, and that he will be one of the most dynamic running backs in the NFL very soon, if not already. So the Bears giving up 100 yards to Barkley, only the second time all year they've done that. The other instance was against the Dolphins and Frank Gore, and I've talked about that one many times because that's unacceptable. But the game itself, an amazing game, right? I mean, I watched it. I was on the edge of my seat. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Here's my problem, though. And I mentioned this earlier, and I'll say it again. That should not have been that close. There's no reason why the Bears even had to fight to even stay in the game. It should have been over a long time ago. The Giants entering that game were 3-8, the Bears 8-3. A tale of 2 different seasons. There is no reason why it had to take the Bears a last-ditch effort to just tie the game, then lose in overtime. That's a game they should have won. And not just because, oh, it's the Giants, but because of their seeding now. Now in the NFC, because the Bears lost, they virtually have no chance of getting the 1 or 2 seed in the playoff picture, meaning they won't get a first-round bye, meaning they have to play wild-card weekend, too. There was a lot riding on that game, believe it or not. And that should have been an easy game to win. The Bears could have caught up to the Saints or Rams, considering the Saints lost to the Cowboys and they faced the Rams next week. Had they won out, the Bears could have gotten the 1st or 2nd seed. Now they lose to a team like the Giants of all teams, and their chances for that happening are virtually impossible. They'll make the playoffs, as long as they don't collapse. But they won't get the 1st or 2nd seed. They're going to have to play wild card weekend. I mean, that's a problem. When you have a golden opportunity, when you have the chance to do something like that, take advantage. Don't let it go. That's what the Bears did. And they totally lost out on a very good opportunity. But I will say this. Their comeback, their resiliency, their ability to never quit, that's a very, very good sign for this team going into the stretch, down the stretch, and going into the playoffs. They could have easily rolled over and said, hey, you know what, Giants, you guys win. We're not even going to waste our time, but they didn't. I mean, scoring 10 points in less than 2 minutes to force overtime, I don't care who you're facing, that is impressive. Recovering an onside kick, Cody Parkey kicking it well. I mean, there's a lot to be happy about, don't get me wrong, from yesterday's game. And again, that resiliency, that ability to get things done, that's going to prove very well come playoff time for the Bears. Again, though, the problem is that they should have won in the first place. This shouldn't have been a close game. And that's what you have to remember. As impressive as that game was, remember that, in the end, the Bears should have won it. Easily. Outright. And now that they didn't, their chances to get a first-round bye in the NFC are virtually over. Looking forward to next week for the Bears, Sunday Night Football against the Los Angeles Rams. It's not going to get any easier. But the good thing is, at least for the Bears, the Rams have never faced a good defense all year. I mean, for crying out loud, they won against the Chiefs 54-51. It's a college-type game on Monday Night Football. Not even college, that's like arena football-type scores. So the Rams have not faced a good defense. How will the Bears respond to this loss against the Rams? That's the question. And I'll tell you what I'm really looking forward to is Jared Goff under pressure from Akeem Hicks, from Khalil Mack, Roquan Smith. That is what I'm looking forward to. I can't wait to see how Goff has to adjust to being constantly hurried to throw the ball, to get it out of his hands, to get out of the pocket. Anyways, though, the Bears, they need to come back next week with some fire. They need to come back and play well defensively. They need to limit Todd Gurley for the Rams. Gurley, arguably, is the best running back today in the NFL, averaging 5 yards a carry, scoring 13 touchdowns already. If the Bears had trouble containing Saquon Barkley, I am worried about what's going to happen when the Bears end up facing Todd Gurley. How are they going to contain him? In these last couple of weeks, I mean, they let up 80 yards to LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount should not be rushing for 80 yards against the Bears. And now Barkley runs for 125. The Bears have to have a better game plan next week when they face Gurley, because Gurley's the type of back, similar to Barkley, that can win you a game single-handedly. And he will. If the Bears don't contain him, he will win that game for the Rams, because the passing game, I can guarantee you, is going to be non-existent if the Bears come to play against Goff. So Todd Gurley is the only liability here for the Bears. They have to find a way to contain him next week. I don't know how they're going to. I have no clue what their game plan is going to be, but I'll tell you what, their rush defense has to get better. You can't give up 80 yards to LeGarrette Blount. You can't give up 100 yards to 35-year-old stone-aged Frank Gore. And that's not taking anything away. I know Gore's going to be a Hall of Fame running back, but come on. The guy's averaged less than 4 yards per carry for these past 4 years. And every single season with the Colts, which are these past 3 years, Gore's averaged less than 4 yards a carry. This year the same, but somehow against the Bears he rushes for 100. And now Barkley does, and Blount rushes for 80 with 2 touchdowns. That rush defense has got to get better, and that's my main concern. How will the Bears end up facing and faring against Todd Gurley? It's a fair concern, too. So I'm curious to see how that ends up working out. But anyways, a nice game by the Bears yesterday, one they should have won, but a good comeback. They showed good resiliency, a good effort, And now I think they're ready for what's ahead against the Rams on Sunday night. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust works with private landowners to protect wildlife, preserve natural habitats, and create permanent sanctuaries. To learn more, call 1-800-729-SAFE or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. So we just finished up talking about the Bears, their loss yesterday against the New York Giants. Also, as we came on the air, we broke the news. Fred Hoiberg has been fired by the Bulls and has been replaced by Jim Boylan to coach. Any thoughts on either of those two issues, give me a call right now, 773-702-8424, or comment on my Facebook Live video. You can do so right away. Now, before we get to our flashback, our announcer's call of the day, and some MLB news, there's another issue with the NFL that I need to talk about. And I want to start it by asking you a question. What does Ray Rice, Reuben Foster, and now Kareem Hunt have in common? Now, your first thought might be guys who don't have a job in the NFL anymore. But believe it or not, that's wrong, because Foster still plays with the Washington Redskins. Maybe it has to do with arrests or criminal activity. But again, if you guessed that, you'd be wrong. Ray Rice never went to prison, nor did Foster or Hunt at this point. The truth is, all three of these NFL players have been the subjects of domestic violence allegations. And for Rice and Hunt specifically, there have been videos that have surfaced which insinuate their guilt. As you all probably know right now, 2 days ago, a video leaked to TMZ showed Kareem Hunt punching a woman while continuing in a physical altercation with her. However, Hunt was never punished by the NFL nor the Cleveland Police Department until now, because the video was leaked. Hunt and the NFL, they never had access to this video. The video was leaked. TMZ reported it. And now, all of a sudden, Hunt is getting punished. What I don't understand, and I haven't understood this for some time, because this goes back to the Ray Rice case. How is the NFL not being able to get their hands on these videos? How is it that TMZ is able to break stories like this, but not the NFL? Not the governing body of National Football League players, but TMZ. They're able to get it, and the NFL isn't. And my question is, what does it say about the NFL and their treatment towards domestic violence issues? I mean, it's kind of worrisome. It's bothersome to me, the fact that a video that TMZ has to leak ends up in a problem for Kareem Hunt. Because before the video came out, Hunt was never punished, was never suspended, was never even suspected of anything. The video comes out all of a sudden, and now Kareem Hunt's just getting released, just getting suspended, just getting fined. All right now. Why didn't this happen earlier? Why was there no investigation? And where the hell's the video? How is it that TMZ got it? I'll say one thing. The Kansas City Chiefs made a great decision by releasing Hunt, because they sent the right message. Kansas City and their Super Bowl hopes have been hit greatly with the release of Hunt. There's no doubt about it. Hunt's one of the better running backs, even one of the top 10 running backs in this game today. But the Chiefs value morality. The Chiefs value good people being on their team, being in their organization. That's why they released him. Hunt's now on waivers, and technically anyone can sign him. No one should. There should be no reason why Kareem Hunt should be signed by a team right now. There should be no reason why Reuben Foster was signed and picked up by the Redskins. If you have allegations of domestic violence against you, there should be no reason why you should be playing right now until those issues are resolved and until a suspension is served. I don't like the way the NFL dealt with this situation. And again, it's eerily similar to that Ray Rice situation. And that's something that was pledged upon. That's something that people said would never happen again. But it did. It did happen again. A couple of days ago. It's quite a shame to see that happen, and shame on Kareem Hunt specifically, because that's something you should never be doing. There should be no reason that type of conduct should be occurring. The Chiefs have lost their Super Bowl chances. They've lost a star running back. And Kareem Hunt may or may not ever play a game in the NFL again. His chances are very grim at this point. In the end, always remember this. This isn't just a sports lesson. This is a life lesson. Do the right thing. The Chiefs did the right thing. Immediately when they saw that video, Hunt was gone. Now, should the NFL and maybe the Chiefs themselves as well have investigated this better before? Of course. Of course they should have. But I'll give the Chiefs credit. They did do the right thing in the end. And that's all that... You have to do the right thing. It'd be so much worse if the Chiefs just let Hunt stick around and wait until the NFL handed out its punishment. That's not the right thing to do. You can't be rewarded for this type of behavior. And luckily enough, Kareem Hunt wasn't. Now, as for the NFL as a whole, the league needs to find ways to obtain videos sooner and punish players directly after the fact, not months into the season. Kareem Hunt should have never stepped foot on an NFL football field this year. Plain and simple. It should have never happened, and it did. And now that this video has surfaced, he's been cut, you know, he's being suspended, that's fine. But nothing, Kareem Hunt should have never, ever stepped onto a football field this year. And shame on the NFL for not looking into this earlier and finding a way to punish him. I am just beside myself with the idea that it had to be TMZ to leak this news. And the fact that the NFL claims that they couldn't see it beforehand. That's not right. That is not the right thing to do. So shame on the NFL for doing that. Kudos to the Chiefs for cutting Kareem Hunt. And in Hunt's case, if I were him, no, beg for mercy. Because I don't know if he'll ever play in the NFL again. And I don't know which team would even want to sign him. Knowing the allegations that are against him, knowing the video is out there, and knowing that he is now suspended at least for the rest of this season. So we just finished up talking about Kareem Hunt, and now it's time for our Sports Talk Chicago flashback featuring an interview with Jim McMahon. I talked to McMahon last week on my personal podcast, had a great time. We talked about his great career here in Chicago with the Bears, the 85 team that he led to the Super Bowl. Also talked about his career and his fight with the NFL as well over head injuries. He won a lawsuit against them 3 years ago, still hasn't been paid. And you'll hear that in the interview. In the very end, we'll talk about his retirement and also a very funny moment that he was a part of when he went to the White House to visit with his Super Bowl ring with the Green Bay Packers. So this interview is about 10, 11 minutes. We'll play that. We'll come back into our call of the day, talk some MLB and some late Chicago Bulls news about Fred Hoiberg and his firing. All of that coming up. You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago here on WHPK. 2018 Bears team and how they've managed to win 8 of their first 11 games. From a quarterback standpoint, what have been your impressions on Mitchell Trubisky and his role in this team's success?
Well, from the little bit that I've seen, it looks like he's playing well. I mean, he's in a good offense. Looks like I've seen that offense, and I would love to play in that kind of an offense. You know, you get to throw the ball around a little bit. It looks like he's making quick decisions, getting rid of the ball, and not turning it over, which is key.
Well, you know, watching this year's Bears team, especially when looking at their defensive attack, it does draw some comparisons to 2006 and your team in 1985. Being a key member of the 85 team, do you consider those comparisons fair? I mean, how does this 2018 team stack up against some of the greatest teams in Bears history, including one that you were a part of?
Well, they seem to be playing good football on both sides of the ball, which we did. And, you know, defensively, they're strong as we were. And offensively, they're throwing the ball a lot more than we did. But, you know, I guess You can't just be one-dimensional. You got to be able to do both, and I guess they're doing well in both.
Jim McMahon here on Sports Talk Chicago. And, Jim, let's go back now to your career starting in college. And I know that originally you had played baseball while serving as the punter at BYU. So the question is, how'd you end up going from punting and playing ball to becoming this All-American quarterback?
Well, I was third-team QB my freshman year, so I made the varsity as the punter, but I was also the third-team quarterback, so it wasn't like I didn't get any reps at all in my freshman year. But I got to sit and watch Gifford Nielsen and Mark Wilson play and learn the offense, and then in my second year I was able to come up and become a starter.
And I know that you had mentioned in the past that if you had received another opportunity, you would have chosen to play baseball professionally instead. Why do you say that?
Oh, I wouldn't feel this damn bad every day, for one. I mean, baseball guys don't get beat up as much. I mean, you know, there are injuries in baseball, but, you know, to the extent that we get hit, it's not the same. So I would rather have done that. I enjoyed baseball more, but, you know, everything worked out.
How do you value your accomplishments in football in comparison to your lifelong injuries? I mean, you helped bring a Super Bowl here to Chicago. You won another in Green Bay and made a Pro Bowl team. But would you rather not have any of that, knowing what you know now about the NFL and about its ties to head-related injuries?
Like I said, everything worked out for the best. I mean, I'd do it again. I'd play, but I wouldn't play with the injuries that I had and knowing what I know now about the head and the neck.
You know, I know that in the past and even to this point, you've been heading a lawsuit against the NFL about the injuries that you've sustained while playing the game. What's your personal goal for this suit, and what are you expecting to actually end up happening with it?
Well, the suit has been over for 3 years now. All of us have been jumping through hoops trying to get paid for our injuries. I've taken every test that they've given or supposed to give you, and I have not heard back it's been almost a year now since I've finished testing, so I don't know how long it's going to take. It took me six or seven years to get through my workman's comp case with the NFL, so they just keep dragging things out as long as they can, you know, hoping you die before they ever have to pay you.
Why do you think the NFL is being so reluctant? I mean, obviously, you won the case in court. You deserve to get the money that was given to you. Is there a reason that you could think of on why the NFL is being so reluctant with this issue?
Well, I can see that, you know, they're taking their time and they're, you know, making sure everybody's injured the way they claim they're being injured or have been injured. So they're making them take all these tests. And like I said, I've done all the testing. I was one of the named plaintiffs in the case. I should have been one of the first guys to get looked at, but now I'm, I guess, at the bottom of the barrel. Who knows? I haven't talked to my attorney in a while, and probably need to do that because it's getting ridiculous.
Do you believe that during your career you were personally misled by the NFL about the risks that involved playing the game?
Not misled, but just uninformed. I mean, everybody knows you're going to get beat up, you know, physically, as far as your joints, your shoulders, your knees, you know, those types of things. But nobody ever mentioned the head to anybody, and that's what the lawsuit was about. And but they continued to deny. I mean, that was part of the lawsuit. Agreeing to the lawsuit was they didn't have to disclose what they knew. And even though, you know, everybody knows they knew everything, just like Big Tobacco knew. I mean, that's who, we had the same lawyers, or they had the same lawyers as Big Tobacco. You tell me what they knew.
Obviously now, you know, since the time that they've played, the NFL has enacted some changes in order to increase safety on the field, you know, with the penalties and with roughing the passer penalties as well. What are your thoughts on some of these new rule changes, and what still needs to be done in your mind to increase safety on the field?
They've done as much as they can without making the game ridiculous. I mean, these defensive guys are getting flagged and getting fined for playing football. I mean, you know, it's a contact sport. Guys are going to get hurt, and you're not going to be able to avoid that. But you know, some of this stuff is ridiculous. I'm glad I'm not playing anymore. Although I might be able to last 20 years playing, because you can't get hit.
Super Bowl champion Jim McMahon here on the show. And Jim, let's go back to the 1985 Super Bowl season. What made you guys so special? I mean, going 15-1, you're beating the Giants and Rams, then crushing the Patriots in the Super Bowl. What went right for you guys that year?
Well, for the most part, we stayed relatively healthy. I was probably about the only one that missed a few games here and there. But that's the key to being successful throughout the years, guys. Key guys have to stay healthy. And for the most part, we did that. And plus, we had the best players in the league on both sides of the ball. So it's tough to not win.
And following your Super Bowl win, everyone remembers the Super Bowl shuffle and its popularity, but I noticed that although you have lines in the record itself, you aren't in the music video. Why is that?
We were in the video. They superimposed us in. We didn't show up to the tape, Walter and I.
And why was that?
Because we told them. We told them that wasn't part of the original deal. The original deal was we're going to record to feed the homeless on Thanksgiving and Christmas, which was a good thing to do. But then they started, you know, now you have to make a video, this and that. And we said, no, that wasn't the deal, so we didn't go. And then we were approached with a lawsuit if we didn't do our part. So Walter and I did our parts a week or two after that after practice one day.
Well, despite what had happened, you win the Super Bowl, you take the country by storm, but the next year, after just 6 games, you had been lost for the season due to an uncalled-for hit by Charles Martin. Take me through what happened on that play and the after effects.
No, I was done after the first game of the season. My arm was shredded. I had no labrum in my shoulder. I continued to try to play. I was lucky to even come back after that because I played with basically nothing supporting my arm at all. Every time I threw the ball, moved my shoulder, it would come out of the socket. So, but then at the end of the, you know, when the Charles Martin thing happened, that was just the last straw. I couldn't do anything else after that. It was done.
Let's say that you weren't hurt and the Charles Martin thing never happened and you were able to play a full season healthy. Do you feel that you guys could have repeated as Super Bowl champions had you been fully healthy and been ready to go?
I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, we're 14-2 the year after we won the Super Bowl. It wasn't like we were terrible. I mean, we were the best team in the league. We had home field advantage for the next 3 years in a row, so... You know, we had a good football team for 5 straight years. We just had bad days in the playoffs.
Following your time here in Chicago, you played for 8 more years in the NFL and finished your career in 1996. What convinced you at that time that it was time to hang him up and retire, and how difficult was that decision for you?
I promised my daughter when she got to high school that I'd quit, no matter what year I was in the NFL. They had moved around for 8 straight years after I left Chicago. And we always came back home in Chicago from December through, you know, the rest of the year. But for the first part of the year, they'd have to go to a different school wherever I was at. And that was rough on them. I know I had to do the same thing when I was in high school, so that sucked. So I told them, when you get to high school, I'll stop and you guys all stay in Chicago, finish out your high school and your colleges, and then that's where we're at now.
And Jim, before we let you go today, I have to ask you about your visit to the White House in 1996 with the Green Bay Packers. Now, I know you guys had just won the Super Bowl, but instead of wearing your Packers jersey, you had decided to wear your Bears jersey, which caused some controversy. What was the reasoning behind that?
Well, simple reason is we didn't get to go after we won in 1985. The space shuttle blew up 2 days later. Countries, visioned or support was all on that, which is very understandable. You know, it would have been nice to squeeze us in. It took them like 28, 30 years to squeeze us in. But as we were going to the White House, I let all my teammates know in Green Bay that, you know, what had happened and that I was going to have my jersey and represent the Bears because we didn't get to go. And they had no problem with it. Didn't have any issues with any of the coaches or the players. Or they all understood. So Clinton got a big kick out of it, but it was no big deal to me.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for being here on the show. Really appreciate the time.
All right, guys. Take care.
Well, there you have it, my interview with Jim McMahon. Really nice guy and some really interesting points made about his lawsuit with the NFL, about the Bears this year, and about his time in the NFL back with the 85 Bears. So right now, we're going to go to the announcer's call of the day segment with one of my favorite announcers. So excited to share this clip with you. Let's go back to last week in the NFL, the Cleveland Browns taking on the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, the Browns were already leading 21-0 behind 3 touchdowns from Baker Mayfield, but they had driven downfield and stood 14 yards away from another touchdown. Let's listen in to Kevin Harlan on the call for CBS Sports as running back Nick Chubb makes an amazing catch.
Third down 3. Chubb it inside. And he's going to go to Chubb. And did he go? Yes, he did! Yes, he did! Chubb jousting with Brandon Wilson. 14-yard touchdown pass. And they cash in on the Demaryius Randall interception. Mayfield has thrown 3 first-half touchdown passes.
Kevin Harlan there on the call. A great catch by Chubb. I don't know if you ended up getting to see it. It was posted all over on social media for the NFL. Chubb balanced the football on the opposing defender's helmet, then brought it down with him into the end zone, held on, amazing concentration to make that catch, and as always, a great call by one of my favorites in Kevin Harlan. That was our announcer's call of the day. Hey guys, make sure to check out the WHBK 88.5 electronic format launch party featuring Igloo Ghost and WHBK DJs Sasha No Disco, DJ Purple, and Jared Brown. It's happening this Thursday, December 6th at 8 p.m. at the Promontory, 5311 South Lake Park Avenue, for $10 each. So again, the electronic format launch party featuring Igloo Ghost and WHBK DJs Sasha No Disco, DJ Purple, and Jared Brown. Supposed to be a really fun event. Igloo Ghost, pretty big in the electronic format, has over 50,000 followers on Twitter and Instagram. Pretty big guy. It's going to be a good show. You can check it out this Thursday night at 8 p.m. Tickets only $10 at the Promontory at 5311 South Lake Park Avenue, right here in the Hyde Park area in Chicago. So a couple of minutes left here on today's program. There's been so much news. There's been so much going on today. I'm so happy that I'm able to share it all with you. Give me a call or comment on my Facebook Live video before the show's over if you have any thoughts on what's been going on today between the firing of Fred Hoiberg and the replacement of Jim Boylan, the Bears game, and much more, and the Kareem Hunt saga for that matter. Again, you can give me a call. The phone lines are open, 773-702-8424, 773-702-8424. Now, I want to go back to some news that we started the show with. We weren't planning on starting it with it, but we had to because it was just unbelievably pressing in nature. Fred Hoiberg, the Chicago Bulls coach, has been fired, and associate head coach Jim Boylan is now the permanent, not the interim head coach, the permanent head coach now of the Chicago Bulls. Hoiberg's, apparently, and this is a new article just posted by the Chicago Sun-Times, was caught off guard. Quote, according to one source, Hoiberg believed he would have the chance to coach a fully healthy team before being evaluated, which the Sun-Times reported Sunday. Bobby Portis and Chris Dunn, who are expected to return within the next 2 weeks, would have allowed Hoiberg to coach the team he had worked with this summer. Right now, the Bulls are 5-19, and here's a statement from John Paxson, quote, after a thorough evaluation, I elected to make this move with the overall development of our team in mind. As a team, I believe it is imperative that we make unfaltering strides in the right direction and build the right habits to help put our players in the best position to evolve, not only now, but into the future. I want to thank Fred for his decision and efforts, as well as for his enduring commitment to our team. End of coach. Quote, unbelievable. Like I said, bombshell news. And, you know, Hoiberg's expectation, believe it or not, is not necessarily wrong. He was operating this season with mostly an unhealthy team. He just got Markkanen back the other day. Portis and Dunn have still been hurt. LaVine has been recovering still from that ACL tear. And you've got Wendell Carter Jr. developing. So there are lots of moving pieces with this team. But as I talked about when I opened the show, the problem is that Fred Hoiberg is not a leader. He is incapable of leading. And with all of these young, exciting pieces that the Bulls have right now, You know, I feel like these guys, when fully healthy, can definitely be a 500 team. With Hoiberg, however, I don't know if that's the case. I mean, they're 5-19. The Cavs are 4-18, worst team in the NBA. The Bulls are 5-19. There's no reason why the Bulls should have that kind of a record. The Bulls aren't that bad. They've had Wendell Carter Jr., Zach LaVine scoring 25 a game, and is a legitimate contender to be an Eastern Conference All-Star. Without a doubt. Markkanen just came back the other night. You've had guys stepping up in roles they haven't been before. Ryan Arcidiacono. There are good reasons as to why Hoiberg was fired. And there's a bad reason, or there's no reason, rather, why the Bulls right now are 5-19, even despite all of these injuries, despite all of these problems that they've endured. And I know that they're trying to tank, and I understand that. But I mean, 5-19, with the players that you have, there's no reason for that. And it makes sense as to why Hoiberg was fired. Again, it's shocking because, as the article quoted, you'd think Hoiberg would get a fair chance, and I do understand where he's coming from. Everyone's been hurt, but at the same time, even with the guys that he's had, he hasn't been capable of getting it done for the Bulls. And now Jim Boylan is, you know, named his replacement, and the thing that I'm wondering is, why is he the permanent head coach? He's not an interim coach. They named him the permanent coach of this team. I don't understand the reasoning behind that. I don't understand why the Bulls aren't going to decide and look around for a coach in the offseason. How do they know that Jim Boylan is the guy to make things happen for them? I'm not sold on that decision at all. Why can't they look around? For example, the Charlotte Hornets just this year, they hired a brand new assistant coach from Greg Popovich's system. They're doing pretty darn well. Why not at least look around and test the market, see who else is out there, see who you could schmooze and take away and put on your team instead? You know, take away an assistant coach from Eric Spoelstra's staff, a great coach, or someone else's staff. Even at that point, you'd get a good basketball mind as a head coach. Instead, they promote Jim Boylan. Jim Boylan's a company man. He's been with the Bulls forever. Before that, with the Spurs. He's been in the NBA for a while in regards to coaching. Why he's the head coach, I have no idea. Why the Bulls elected to keep him around and not go after another coach makes no sense. Now, see, I'd understand if they said Boylan is an interim. That makes perfect sense. Keep him as an interim for the rest of the year, find a new coach in the offseason, have everything work itself out. But naming him the permanent head coach, making sure that his name is not tied to the interim status, makes me wonder why. And makes me wonder how Jim Boylan is somehow qualified enough to lead this Bulls team. Just quite shocking to think about. I know we didn't get a chance to get to the MLB today. Unfortunately, you know, there was some big news today. I didn't expect to hear about Fred Hoiberg being fired. And as I mentioned when we started the show, this news was literally broken 5 minutes before I came on the air. I was up here getting ready to start, you know, transitioning with the DJ before me. And all of a sudden, I look on my phone and Fred Hoiberg's fired. So quite a shocking turn of events. So happy. Couldn't have been better timing in regards to this show. We only go on every Monday, so perfect timing. We were able to talk about this now and not have to wait until next week. But again, yeah, just unbelievably crazy news. Something that I was not expecting. I mean, look, I was expecting it to happen eventually because, again, I don't believe in Hoiberg as a coach. But in regards to right now, during the season, I was not expecting that to happen. Now, towards the end of the year would have made more sense. Right now, though, I don't understand what the Bulls are trying to accomplish with this move. I don't still understand why Jim Boylan has been named the permanent head coach. These are questions that hopefully will be answered soon, and hopefully I can provide some answers to you come next week's show. Well, that does it for us today. I hope you enjoyed the show. So much fun stuff and so much breaking news that we talked about between the Bulls and the Bears and Kareem Hunt. Again, I'm John Zagluel. You can find me on Twitter at John Z Sports, Facebook at John Zagluel, Instagram at John Zags, LinkedIn at John Zagluel. And also make sure to tune in to SportsTalkChicago.com to hear these shows in their podcast form or more of my special podcasts.